You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I can no longer remain in today's Democratic Party that's under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers who are driven by cowardly wokeness, who divide us by racializing every issue and stoking anti-white racism, who actively work to undermine our God-given freedoms that are enshrined in our Constitution, who are hostile to people of faith and spirituality, who demonize the police but protect criminals at the expense of law-abiding Americans, who believe in open borders, who weaponize the national security state to go after their political opponents, and above all, who are dragging us ever closer to nuclear war.
Very powerful statement coming from a woman who once wanted to be a Democrat nominee for the White House. This is October 11, 2021. Those are the words of former Democrat Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. Let me remind you, we are live streaming at rumble.com. You go to rumble.com, enter in the search engine, one word, Larry Connors, USA. It'll take you to our Rumble page. You push live and you join us in studio. Also remember, you can subscribe absolutely free. We'll send it to you on a regular basis. We do not share our information with anyone else. And you can also get our podcast at LarryConnorsUSA.com. LarryConnorsUSA.com. Subscribe. Again, we'll send them to you. So here is Congressman, former Democrat Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. She represented Hawaii from 2013 to 2021. In 2020, she ran to win the Democrat nomination for president, but she ended up dropping out of her campaign to endorse Joe Biden, who's now a puppet of the woke culture, the very one you heard her denounce. And in 2016, you should know that Tulsi Gabbard endorsed Bernie Sanders. This woman is evolving. Now, I've always really appreciated her for several things. One, she's a U.S. Army Reserve officer currently, but she served in our military. She is the first Hindu member of Congress, and she's the first Samoan American in Congress. She's got a lot of qualities that I really like. But I always thought she's on the wrong side of the fence. I think she finally woke up and saw, yeah, the grass is greener on the other side. But is she going to go to the Republican Party or something else? We'll get into that later on our program today. And in Iran, women are leading a revolution. I should correct that, a rebellion. It's not a revolution yet. You don't really have a revolution until you get the military on your side. So far, they don't. But women in Iran are leading the rebellion. They're calling for freedom in Iran. Now, this is after a young woman died in government custody, arrested on moral charges because she did not properly wear her hijab to cover her hair. That's right. Morality police saw her and she did not have her hijab correctly positioned. They arrested her and she died in their custody. Her parents say they killed her. We don't know that, but we do know that women across Iran have been fighting back and in the streets. That's a very dangerous situation to do so in Iran. And all of you women who want to go out and protest and shout against any issue, whatever it be, keep in mind what they risk in Iran to do that. My guest is Fred Flights with the American First Policy Institute. He has extensive knowledge of Iran. I want to ask him, will the women actually be able to lead the country to a true revolution? Also, CNN anchor Christina Amanpour explains why she walked out of an interview with the Iranian president when he demanded that she cover her hair. She said, I'm not going to do it. You'll hear why. And also, my guest Nathan Blake with the Federalist senior editor, how pro-lifers are winning, but he has a warning on what could lead to more abortions. Plus, what's your view of Halloween? Now, it could be considered just innocent fun for children, correct? It may be by some be considered teaching occult maybe anti-Christian? Is it just a way to add more woke culture? I want you to hear reaction to one school's decision when it came to a Halloween parade. A parade. And again, it does raise questions for you and your family on Halloween. How do you celebrate? Do you celebrate Halloween? Especially young children. And does your faith involve Halloween celebrations or rejecting it? We have a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Make your family and friends aware that we're on the air right now. They do not want to miss anything. But if they do, they can pull up the podcast or our YouTube presentation. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Your eyes are burning. You're sneezing. It's allergy season. Pollen readings are sky high. Heck, you can even see that yellow powder on everything. So that's also inside your air conditioning ducts. I suggest you call Wellington Environmental. Now, other companies will be glad to do the job, but they're going to come to your home or business, count the air ducts, and begin increasing the cost. In fact, the quoted price might even double. Wellington offers one price, no extras. You'll be charged exactly what Wellington quotes. So this is easy for you. Call 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You will breathe easier. Wellington has a AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest, best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Mustang Sally. Guess you better slow up than Mustang down.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Huge protests in Iran over the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini, who died after being arrested by Iran's morality police. She was in their custody, accused of violating rules surrounding the wearing of the headscarf. Iranian authorities say that Amini died of heart failure, but her family says she was in good health before she was arrested and had no pre-existing heart condition. With us now is CNN chief international anchor Christiane Amanpour. Christiane, we see these protests. Mm-hmm. We see the women on the streets here. And those are acts of bravery.
I mean, they really are, because you're seeing not just the protests, you're seeing women go on social media cutting their hair in protest. You see some in the streets, even elderly women. We saw at least one burning their hijabs.
That's a powerful statement to take place in the streets of Iran, to burn your hijab, and women ripping their hijabs off. We told you the other day that some female students were ripping their hijabs off and giving the finger to the Iranian leader. Now, that might be considered just teenage-type rebellion, but that's not acceptable in Iran. And if they didn't pay a price for it, their parents did, or maybe all of them did before it was over with. I want to take a moment to talk about Christiane Amanpour, because she's going to figure a little bit later in this story segment as well. She has certainly extensive knowledge of what's happening in Iran. But I've always, again, admired this reporter because I've watched her in the battlefield situations, and you have to be a very special person to cover action from a battlefield, and especially a woman, especially if you're operating in Muslim Sharia-type countries. Christiane Amanpour was born in a West London suburb. She was raised in Tehran until the age of 11. Her father was Shia Muslim, her mother Catholic. Now, after she completed a lot of her education, she went to a boarding school in England, and then later ended up, because the family was watching what was happening, they left Iran not long after the Islamic Revolution began, and there's the family remained at that point. And then she moved to the U.S. to study journalism. And for a period of time, she worked at an NBC affiliate in Providence, Rhode Island, a graphics designer, far from actually being, quote, a journalist and covering stories. But she graduated from the university, summa cum laude, with a BA degree in journalism. In 1983, she got hired by CNN. And I've told you that in the past, I will mock CNN for many times when they take, quote, reporters and turn them into analysts and making commentary during an actual news report. She obviously has some very strong views and has expressed them, but overall, when it comes to just factual reporting, she seems to be right on target. And then she first had her job with CNN, an entry-level desk assistant, working the foreign desk in Atlanta. Then she got a chance to become a correspondent, her first major assignment, covering the Iran-Iraq war. And again, as being a woman in a war zone, you have to give them special credit. Later, she got transferred to Eastern Europe to report on the fall of European communism. And then in 1989, assigned to West Germany, where she reported on the Democrat revolutions sweeping Eastern Europe at that time, and gradually moved up to be a correspondent for New York, the CNN's New York Bureau. She has extensive credentials. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And see, that's what someone who has put themselves to work and in danger, in some cases, making their way up the line. She didn't simply demand, look, I am who I am, and I should be leading the CNN New York Bureau or any other position. Too many people nowadays think, well, if you have a name like Amin Poor, then they should automatically elevate you. Not unless you're doing the job. Now, here's where she comes back into the story. You heard her talking about the danger these women face and what they're doing in Iran and showing their dissatisfaction. But I want her to explain in more detail as she was discussing what these women are doing and why Christina Amanpour.
This young woman was killed, at least that's what her parents are saying and that's what her family is saying, because they say she was wrongly taken in by the morality police. They say she was wearing her scarf, she had no makeup on, she was visiting Tehran and was, you know, caught up in a dragnet of these people who drive around, stand at intersections, have their vans and just, you know, bring in all sorts of women and young girls who they say are not dressed modestly enough. And I have to say that this has been going on much, much more stringently since the election of this current government. Very hardline government in Iran comes after the more reformist government of President Rouhani, and the women are always the barometer. And this government has chosen to crack down hard on social, you know, social norms and society.
Again, I want you to contrast what's happening in Iran with USA. So many in this country want to vilify this nation and our Constitution and our freedoms and our liberties. But contrast what you can do in this nation compared to Iran. And, of course, communist-run governments as well, be it Russia, North Korea, Cuba, but we're talking about something different with Iran and the Muslim nations in the sense where they're imposing Sharia law, where they will stone a woman to death if she does not appear properly dressed or is not following Sharia law, as they describe it. Now, you heard Christina point out that all of this has happened and escalated because of a change of leadership. That is because we now have Iranian President Raisi in charge. It was recently his first trip to come to New York, to U.S. soil, and she was going to schedule an interview with him and had one actually set up, but it didn't happen. We'll get to explaining that a little bit later. But as she knows the Iranian women and what they're trying to do, you can tell that she admires them, as I do too, because they're trying to stand up against an intolerant society, and it's just simply, as you heard her describe, the morals police. What would happen in our nation if suddenly the, quote, government created a morals police that would come around and grab you up for whatever they decided today is immoral that you do that? May not have been yesterday, but it is today. And you would never know where the line was going to shift. You would never know if you stepped across it because you didn't know where it was. You didn't even know it existed until they showed up and declared that something was forbidden. And you just violated it, and you're going to jail. Where are all of these that cry out that this nation does not respect freedom and is systemically trying to hold people back? I see people in this nation all the time having a chance to advance and move forward. Are there conditions and cases that exist in this nation where people are being prevented from some advancement? Yes, but you know what's happened with it lately? That normally is controlled by the woke culture. And they want to demonize anybody that disagrees with them and call you out. How far, riddle me this, how far do you think the woke culture would exist and for how long in Iran? I think we know, don't we? When it comes to LGBTQ type community issues, regardless of where you stand with them, in Iran, if you stand too close, you will also be beheaded or stoned or thrown off a building, then hauled up and thrown off again, and then stoned again. So when Amanpour explains all these new restrictions in place, she gives you more detail.
I think if I could just guess, and how do I read it? I think that he did not want to be seen with a female without a headscarf in this moment. Either because he calls it a religious month, or because people would say, how come he's sitting down with a foreign journalist who's not wearing a headscarf, and yet inside Iran they're cracking down on young women who are not wearing their headscarves. But the fact of the matter is the women are wearing their headscarves. Sometimes in protest they take them off. But the authorities, and I know because I've been there and seen it, each year they change their boundaries and their lines. Sometimes the headscarf has to be here. Sometimes it's okay if it's here. You just never quite know what the parameters are.
And that is setting up the fact as to why she was not able to get the interview with the Iranian president in New York City recently. Because she has done past interviews with Iranian leaders. And if she's in Iran, she wears a headscarf because it's their country. And she's complying with their culture and inside their country. But this interview to be done with Iranian President Raisi in New York City never came off because suddenly they started throwing objections to her, you know, herself and her mode of dress.
There, because it is the custom, one always does wear the headscarf when one's there. That's just, otherwise you couldn't operate as a journalist. Here in New York or anywhere else outside of Iran, I have never been asked by any Iranian president, and I have interviewed every single one of them since 1995, either inside or outside Iran, never been asked to wear a headscarf. After hours of getting this interview ready, having pre-talks with the president's officials, giving them sort of an idea of what we wanted to ask about, not questions, obviously, but an idea. They knew exactly we wanted to talk about the nuclear deal. We wanted to talk about Iran's support for Russia against Ukraine. And most importantly, we want to talk about the violation of human rights. At the very end, they come up with this, you know, it's a religious month of mourning and we need you to wear a headscarf. And I very politely declined on behalf of myself and CNN and female journalists everywhere because it is not a requirement. And it was lobbed at us at the very last minute. And very unfortunately, they decided to pull the interview.
Did you note also that she said that I had already given them some idea of where we're going, but not the exact questions? Again, that's good, proper journalism. I'll give you the parameters of what we're going to be discussing. I'm not going to give you specifics. One, it ruins the integrity of the interview. But again, here she points out that we're not going to follow Sharia law inside the USA. But as she also said, I guess that he or some of his advisors said, you cannot be seen publicly with a female journalist who's not wearing a scarf, since so many women are now in the streets taking theirs off and burning them. You just can't do that. She also mentioned she wanted to bring up the discussion with Iran and its possible nuclear deal it's working on with the Biden administration. Another Iranian journalist, an activist, said that despite various attempts to kidnap and kill her, she's not afraid for her life at this point, but she also admits that the Biden administration keeps negotiating with Iran that are filled with hostage takers, kidnappers, killers, and why do they continue doing that? It's a very good question. We've asked that often. Why is Iran willing to have any kind of negotiations with Iran and make allowances for them to build a nuclear weapon? I've got a guest coming up later. We've had him on this subject numerous times before, Fred Flights, an expert in national intel and Iran itself. And Fred is a vice chair of the America First Policy Institute. I want his take on that and also what is happening in Iran right now with these women. Could it actually lead to an overthrow of the Iranian government? Or is it just a bunch of noise and possible blood in the street? But before that, I want to take you to Ukraine. New missiles being fired by Russia into Ukraine, and this time the reports are they're hitting maybe 40 miles from Poland, a NATO country, on the western edge of Ukraine. Stand by, please.
You don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger. And you don't mess around with Jim.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
This was the day the war came back to all of Ukraine. The capital, Kiev, like many cities for months edging towards normal, hit by multiple missile strikes. Carnage at rush hour, central streets hit. The target, unclear. The aim, utter horror. Over 100 missiles and drones. The civilian death toll rising, along with global fury, that there was nothing the Kremlin would not hit.
That was yesterday, and it's underway again today in Ukraine. Air raids sounding in several regions of Ukraine again today as Russia launched even more missile attacks into the country and reminding you, in many cases, it's almost as if they're indiscriminate. These are supposedly guided missiles. They already have a target pinpointed. But the way they're falling, you'd think they're simply back to the old days of the Iran-Iraq war where they're just firing drones and, dud missiles that, I should say dud, they're not, they will explode, but, I mean, they have no capability of actually directing them. They just send them up and let them fall wherever they might be, as they had also done into Israel at one point. But now there's a report that some of these latest missile assaults have hit just 40 miles from Poland, which is a NATO country. That's on the western edge of Ukraine. Now, if missiles go into Poland, the U.S. under the NATO treaty will be obliged to step in. You need to pray this does not escalate beyond Ukraine, and of course pray that it comes to an end anyway. They had at least 19 and 100 killed and 100 injured yesterday. They're still looking at casualties from yesterday and now the new casualties today. The Russian deputy foreign minister is warning that Moscow could take, quote, countermeasures against the U.S. and European allies because they are looking like they're going to get increasingly involved. To that point, France has now said it will deploy additional forces to to bolster NATO's defense posture in Eastern Europe. That's direct from the French earlier today. That's after this latest rain of attacks of missiles, some falling, as I said, just 40 miles from Poland. And our U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Linda Thomas-Greenfield, says you need to watch what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, what's on schedule for tomorrow, in addition to maybe more missiles raining down on Ukraine? It's what's going to happen in the General Assembly at the U.N. in New York. There will be a vote on the resolution to condemn Russia's annexations in eastern Ukraine. Unlike the U.N. Security Council, there are no vetoes allowed in the General Assembly Hall. Abstentions will not count for the official tally, so they want to see who is going to side with Russia. You can't be absent, and just your vote won't count at all, and maybe some will choose to do that, but you can't vote against it. You're either going to vote for it or you're not going to vote for it. So they say this vote is about defending the UN and its charter, but it's more than that. And in fact, the U.S. ambassador admits that they cannot predict at this point how China and India or any other country will vote. There are about 70 co-sponsors of the resolution. Now, keep in mind, Russia has various regions inside Ukraine, in addition to Crimea, that it considers have been annexed again back to Russia, as it was under the old Soviet Union. Now, yesterday, Russia tried to get a secret ballot on that resolution. A secret ballot. It was not approved. So what we're going to see tomorrow is apparently who actually is siding with Russia and against Ukraine and against what we call, at this point, barbarous attack upon Ukraine without any provocation. And we'll see who's actually standing with Russia against Ukraine and basically against much of the Western world. China and India, they may well simply not show up. That will be happening tomorrow. We'll be keeping an eye on it. As I mentioned in the beginning today, and we were listening in that first segment to what's happening in Iran with women ripping off their hijabs and burning them, and then sometimes giving a single finger to the Iranian leaders at the risk of death. Could that kind of rebellion lead to an actual revolution? And what does that mean for the world? My guest coming up, Fred Flights. He'll have details. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Some car dealers might try to take advantage of you. One quick way to spot it, look at the sticker price. Jay Ackerman told me, especially in these times, he wants to reward the generations of buyers and the new customers. So Ackerman Toyota sells every car at sticker price. No markup. What you see is what you pay. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back, my guest. We've had him on numerous times before, always enlightening, engaging, and we get a lot of information from him. It's Fred Flights, former U.S. government official, serving since 2022 as vice chair of the American First Policy Institute Center for American Security, previously serving as chief of staff, executive secretary of the National Security Council, 25 years with the CIA and Defense Intelligence Agency, and on and on. And in other words, extensive credentials. Fred, as always, welcome aboard.
Hey, Larry, good to be here.
Well, I tell you, I reached out for you today because I'm watching a lot of this stuff happening in Iran, and I know a lot of folks here, we've got a lot of other things on our plate. We've got inflation, we've got everything else going, and of course the Russia-Ukraine issue, and they may not be paying attention to what's happening in Iran. When we have women ripping off their hijabs, burning them, throwing the single finger to the Iranian leaders, that is a rebellion, but is it really a sign of a revolution to come?
You know, it's beginning to look like a revolution. I guess I'm afraid to say that because there were massive protests in 2009, which looked like was going to take down the regime, and it responded with incredible force. But this one seems to have legs and seems to be lasting, and it's growing. Recently, there were reports of strikes at oil refineries, which is something that helped bring down the Shah in 1979. So I think the regime has a real problem on its hands.
Well, one question I had to ask you right away, since if you're going to have a revolution, you almost have to have the military on your side. You don't see any signs of that at this point, correct?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. There's two problems here. First of all, there isn't any leader. There's no agenda or other than protesting the regime and women protesting. You know, what are their demands? What's the purpose of the demonstration? And if the military is not behind it, there should be defections from security forces. There's been some scattered reports of that, but I haven't seen any reports that that's really happening. But if that starts happening, it could turn into be something really big.
I was interviewing, I said I wasn't interviewing, but I was listening to an interview portion with Christina Amanpour, as you well know from CNN, extensive coverage of that area, and she was going to interview Premier Rossi this last week or two in New York, and he refused to do it because she was not going to wear hijab, and she said, well, we're in New York, we're not in your country, and I'm not going to do it. And her thought was that he felt that he couldn't even be seen with a woman, a Western journalist, without her hair covered, or it would add to the conflict, the rebellion in the streets in his country. Your thought?
Well, I think that was Amanpour's best moment, and I don't like her because she's a liberal CNN journalist who gets it wrong most of the time. But remember when Leslie Stahl interviewed this guy recently?
Yes, she did.
Wore a head covering because that's what the Iranians demanded. They see women as second-class citizens, and this head veil is not part of the Islamic religion. And the women of Iran are tired of it. They think they can be good Muslims and not have to wear this veil. They want to wear it. It's a choice. But for the government to force a woman to wear it, the women of Iran are tired of this. And I think that it is really to the credit of the CNN reporter that she didn't go along with this.
Now, I want to go into that a little bit more because at the beginning of the hour, I spent considerable time talking about I do have a lot of respect for her for being a woman and in that part of the world covering the stuff she had. Once she got CNN. Now, I grant she's liberal-minded, but when it comes to basic facts, for the most part, I've seen it to be accurate. But you're saying you don't think so?
I think you're probably right. I just think that she also has a pretty strong anti-Republican agenda that comes out too often. But you're right. She's been a good international reporter. I think she's very smart and understands international affairs. And on this particular incident, I'm very proud of her.
Now, she had mentioned also in the interview about the 60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl. She didn't name her, but talking about 60 Minutes. Was that interview done on U.S. soil, or was that done in Iran?
I think it was done on U.S. soil.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. That's what I was thinking.
It was done a little while before the CNN interview, but not that long before.
Now, again, then, some will look at all this, say it's just Women who are listening, this is not meant to be a pejorative or dismissal, but some would have the attitude, it's just a bunch of women out there, and it's not that many, and it's really just a scattering. Is that really the way it's being seen, you think, by the government and are those living in Iran?
Well, I mean, it isn't just women causing trouble. The women of Iran know how the women of the world are treated. They know that they can and should be treated equally. And the regime hasn't been able to keep, this knowledge of the outside world from the people of Iran. The men of Iran don't like this either. If you have a daughter or a wife, you don't want to see them treated the way Iranian women are treated. So, I mean, the fact that an Iranian woman who doesn't properly wear her head veil gets beaten to death, that's what started this whole thing. It's not that she wasn't wearing one. She wasn't wearing it properly. And they beat her to a pulp, and she died in a coma in a hospital. That's what started this whole protest. And the women of the country are saying that these morality police can beat me with a baton if I don't wear a veil or if I dance in the streets. This is just so incredibly backward. The women of the country aren't standing for it, and the men are standing with them.
The way the broadcast has been treated in Iran, from what I'm reading here, is that they're taking, if there's any images of protesters who have died in the violent crackdown, and something like 185, including about 20 children, have been killed in some of these since all this started September 16, but they replace those images with the Supreme Leader, Khamenei. In other words, make it go away. I'm surprised they ever got videoed, first of all, and even an effort to put it up in front of the people.
Well, I mean, when the Iranian people are saying death to the dictator, they're calling for the downfall of the regime, and not for the first time. This has been going on for a long time, but this repressive regime is keeping the protests down. My biggest problem here, Larry, is that we are just not hearing enough about this from the Western media. We're not seeing condemnation by the Democratic Party. Where are America's women's groups, women's
Perfect.
Organizations? Why aren't they speaking out on this? Why aren't they running ads? Why aren't they demanding that, you know, most of Iran's diplomats, except for maybe one, be thrown out of the mission in New York? There's just a deafening silence.
Well, you
by
also,
this administration and by Americans on the left.
And you also get from this administration, who's all wrapped around the LGBTQ demands and cult woke culture, silence on, we know what would happen to homosexuals of any type inside Iran.
That's exactly right. They're being executed. And you know, this, I mean, it's not that the administration has said nothing, but it hasn't said nearly enough. It's better the Obama administration, when Obama tried to say nothing, and the French had to take the lead in 2009 with the last major, well, the largest demonstration to date was in 2009. And Obama wanted his nuclear deal. He did not want to criticize the Iranian regime.
To that extent, I was reading earlier, too, that a former, she is an Iranian reporter, and she said that I've been under threats numerous times from the Iranian officials for my reporting, but I do not understand why the Biden administration continues to want to negotiate with these Iranian leaders, knowing that they're killers and they simply want to destroy everyone but themselves.
Well, as I've said on your program, under this deal that the Biden team has put together, Iran will get $1 trillion in sanctions relief by 2030. And an awful lot of that money is going to go to the security services to oppress the people of Iran, to beat women who don't wear their veils. That's something that actually I think that's getting through. It seems to me that the administration has been less eager to get the deal over the last couple of weeks because they realize that there's really incredibly strong bipartisan opposition to this, especially now.
How much weight would it add if Biden in the White House started standing with those women and saying, you need to, I mean, we want him to do it with China, really, when you come down to it, but I'm just asking you, how much weight would it carry?
It's what the leader of the free world should be doing. I don't know. I think they would appreciate it. It's not going to move the Iranian regime. They already hate us, and they don't have any regard for the American president, no matter who it is. But I think that's what the leader of the free world should be doing, and I'm just not hearing enough from Biden about this. He made just a passing remark about this in his General Assembly speech. He should have done much more.
All right. Fred, as always, I appreciate your time, and again, we'll do it in the future.
Okay, great to be here. Thanks, Larry.
You bet. Glad to have Fred Flights again. He's the vice chair of the America First Policy Institute for American Policies. When we come back, law and order, or maybe lack of law and order, or certainly lack of punishment for crimes. And then you've got the elites who tell you, well, you don't need police, but I'm willing to spend taxpayer dollars for my private security. And one in particular comes to the top this time, Stacey Abrams, an election denier, by the way, running again to be governor of Georgia. When you hear what she's spending on security, shouldn't you get the same? Don't count on it. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Here's exciting news for Cafe Napoli. Soon there will be Napoli Sea. Unique, exquisite, the finest, freshest seafood, lobster, crab, the best caviar. Napoli Sea will be next door to Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. So it's going to be easy to satisfy your seafood craving or the finest Italian food. Napoli Sea, coming soon. Joining Cafe Napoli, St. Charles, Counting Country, and Clayton.
I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So we have talked previously about Missouri Congresswoman Cori Bush, who spends $70,000, $90,000 or more of taxpayer dollars for private security. And says she's entitled, saying basically, what do you want? You want to see a black woman killed? No, I don't want to see a black woman killed. But you're one of the same ones who says defund the police. And when you defund police, you're taking out of the neighborhoods that need police protection for the most part. If you have to reduce your ranks, your patrolling areas, you're probably going to lose some protection in some of those same areas that are fraught with crime. It is not helping the minority community. Those in private estate areas are going to have their own personal guards if they need to. Bringing us to Stacey Abrams, Democrat of Georgia, who has also called for defunding the police and railing against the privatization of justice. Word coming out now that she has spent, according to one investigation, something like $400,000 on private security between July and August, just between July and August. Now, these are not taxpayer dollars. These are apparently money she's raising for whatever. I guess it could be part of her campaign cost. Wait and see if it shows up on the campaign sheet. And between December 2021 and June 2022, she spent another $800,000. In other words, that's $1.2 million on private security for Stacey Abrams. And yet she had said back in June when asked if police budget should be reduced, we have to reallocate sources. Yes, if there's a moment where resources are so tight that we have to choose between whether, and here's where it goes off rails. If we have to choose whether we murder black people or serve black people, then absolutely our choice must be service. That has to be the choice. Then she goes on to say, or had said back in 2018, I do not believe in the privatization of justice. There's a profit motive behind private prisons that is an anathema to the core of who we are as Americans. But she has no problem with privatization of her security, spending $1.2 million, as I just told you. If you look around, you're going to see a lot of the Democrats trying to walk back from that defund issue. They look at the crime, they know it's going on, they know it's a big issue, so they just want to move away from it. Let me give you another example. Former Arizona Democrat State Senator Kirsten Engel, now running for Arizona's 6th Congressional District. She has a long history of supporting defunding the police. She was asked during a debate for the Arizona State Senate in 2020, would you support a reduction in police budgets to fund social programs, including a shift in some police responsibilities to social workers? Her answer, yes. The way you ask that, I agree with it. What I see is shifting. What we need to do is shift where the money is going. In other words, don't use the word defund. Let's shift it. Do you see any difference in the meaning? There is none. Then she adds, not every 911 call requires a police officer at your door. That's understandable, but unfortunately, then she goes to the next level and says, we have situations when we have a police response for something that might be a mental health crisis. How would you know if it's a mental health crisis until you get there? So what they're still talking about doing, and we talked about this before, they want to reallocate money from police departments and give it to mental health experts, behavioral health experts, and they're not going to be really experts. You have to understand that. is not going to be the top of a behavioral institute or health mental health institute. It's going to be those at the lower end of the ranking. Generally, newly graduated mental health care providers, and they come out with their degree, and I know they're anxious to help, and you have to applaud and be thankful for it, but you're going to put them out there to go to a door and knock on it to someone who might be mentally deranged without any police even standing there just in case something goes wrong? Real Clear Politics reported that Engel in 2019 and 2020 also opposed greater funding for more vigorous border enforcement. There was legislation that would provide millions of dollars for the Arizona Border Strike Force, and she did not want to see that funded. The problem with the woke culture and the Democrats of today is they have abandoned reality. They're going as far left as they can. What else can I do to get a little closer? Joe Biden sold himself out when it comes to abortion. The same Joe Biden who, as a senator, as a Catholic, voted for the Hyde Amendment to protect federal dollars, make sure they don't go to pay for abortions, now says, well, that we need to do it. And when they say they're willing to send a young man or woman to the house of someone who doesn't really need a police officer, they made a 911 call and saying, I'm feeling kind of like I'm going to go crazy if I don't have someone to help me. You really want your child, newly graduated from college, to go over there and confront them? You do realize some of the most deadly situations police face is going to check on a domestic issue, maybe between spouses or girl, boyfriend, whatever. You want to put your child on the front line and send the police somewhere else? That is partly why former Congressman Tulsi Gabbard says to the Democrat Party, I'm out of here. I'm gone. But where is she going? We have that story coming up in our next hour. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.